Good morning, everybody. Hey, Dave Weiner here in Morning Coffee Notes. It's Wednesday, is it? Yeah, it's Wednesday, December 6, 2006, 12:06:06. This is Morning Coffee Notes. It's, well, let's see, this is the day that the Iraq Study Group produced its report, and the NPR reporters are very excited about it. They say that they've really given the president a really bad report card, but at the same time, they suggest doing some more training of the supposed Iraqi security force. But they're still lying to us. The big lie, of course, is in how they explain. They try to explain, or they, you know what, they don't even bother to try to explain. That's a lot of words strung together. But they don't even try to explain how Iraq is different from the United States. And so without explaining that, they sort of expect us to put our own template over it and see it as sort of like, well, most of the military in Iraq are work for the government, and the government is who we're talking to. And so there's the military, and if we train the military, then they can sort of clean up and mop up and get rid of the insurgents. Well, that isn't actually what's going on in Iraq. And you say, well, how is it that I know? And I don't, because I listen, and I ask questions, and I don't hear answers to it. Or when I do, like, for example, we know that, Maliki, people pronounce it Malachi as if it were like an Eastern European name, but it's not. It's an Arabic name, and I think the correct way to pronounce it is Maliki. Anyway, he's a Shiite, and he has made his deal with the most powerful militia, and that's the radical Shiite demigod Muqtadir al-Sadr, the son of a martyred Shiite cleric, radical Shiite cleric Muqtadir al-Sadr, and he's the guy with the power. He's got the militia. Well, you know, and of course, when we send guns into Iraq, a certain number of those guns make their way into, well, they certainly end up in the hands of people who are, you know, people who, in some sense, we consider them to be soldiers. Do they go into the soldiers that are keeping Maliki in power? If they do, then they're going into the hands of Muqtadir al-Sadr. And when we talk about fighting the insurgents, well, I think we're talking about fighting Muqtadir al-Sadr. So when Maliki comes to talk to us, here's the guy who's the rep for Muqtadir al-Sadr, and we're asking him, what progress have you made in fighting against yourself? And I just, you know, would love, the only thing I wonder about is if this pretense extends into the room, or if inside the room when they have these talks, they don't bother with the pretense. In other words, is Bush lying to himself, and does he believe this? Or does Bush, you know, are they all in collusion with each other, or are they all in delusion, or can they not face the truth? I mean, tell us specifically, answer this question. Who are the insurgents? Okay, and don't tell me they're just evildoers, or, you know, tell me specifically, are they the militia? And if they're the militia, who do they work for? And where does Maliki get his support from? And who is Maliki? What's your vision for who's going to be the president of Iraq that we pass off to? And when we spend all this time and money training, in what sense aren't we training and arming the militias? And the answer is, of course, we are arming and training the militias. We're trying, I suppose, to pick some set of militias that are loyal to us and that we'll be able to work with later, but I think that's just so far from reality that there really is, at some point, we are going to I don't care what you call it. If you call it cut and run, great. Let's call it cut and run. Or if you want to call it redeploy back to the United States, okay, we're going to redeploy back to the United States. At some point, we're going to get the fuck out of there. And the question is, how much will we have to lose before we do that? And why should we lose that? Why should any more Americans die in Iraq? When the outcome is already, we know the outcome. We know it. I mean, there's no way, I don't even know what their story is. I mean, what kind of Iraq is it that they want to leave there? And this also begs the question is, why are we spending so much of our energy and time and focus on Iraq? What kind of madness is this? 10 years ago, most Americans had not even heard of Iraq. That's how unimportant Iraq is in our lives. Somehow we've been made to care about Iraq almost as if we care about Iraq more than we care about the United States. I mean, when was the last time you heard about a problem in California on the news? When was the last time you heard about a problem in New Orleans on the news? I mean, has that fallen off the radar? That is the United States of America, folks. I mean, that's our country. You know, if you have to stretch to see that Iraq is a matter of importance for the United States of America, it requires no stretch whatsoever. It's by definition a matter of importance to the United States of America, the future of one of our major cities. A million Americans live in that city. A lot of our culture comes from that city. A lot of our commerce flows through that city. It's an American fucking city. But we're not paying any attention to the situation there. It's off our radar entirely. And there's no good outcome. So we might as well. My philosophy is like, okay, if I can see that there's no good outcome possible here, I'm going to take my bad medicine as soon as I possibly can to try to keep my losses to a minimum. It just makes common sense. I mean, that's why we hire a goddamn president, is to make big decisions on our behalf and use our brains. Use the brains God gave you. And who gives a shit whether you're right or wrong? You're wrong, Bush. Okay, get over it. I don't know. Anyway, so I was just going to mention something briefly about this, but I guess this is turning into an 8-minute rant on this subject. I was going to talk about vendor relationship management, which is this very, it's a Doc Searls concept, and it is a very elegant concept. And it ties together an awful lot of things, and it keeps revealing facets to it that are, you know, things that are on the checklist of what we want from our new economic structure that's made possible by all the new information flows that are created by the internet. And so vendor relationship management, and it has this nice sort of image, flip image of customer relationship management, which is what the vendors use to manage us. That's the 20th century. The 20th century was big vendors managing billions of couch potato eyeball customers. That was the 20th century. The 21st century, everything's the other way around. And it's vendors, it's users becoming vendors, much like in journalism, the audience has become the profession. It has become the journalists. Gradually, maybe not so gradually anymore, and in commerce, more generally, the customers are going to become the vendors, and so one of the next steps along that path is for the customers to start managing the vendors. Now, what does that mean? Now, it means a lot of things. Let's start with some easy examples, all right? One of my prototypical examples is I have I rate movies, and I like to go to the movies. I like to, I'm a Netflix customer. I like to watch Netflix movies, and I've become a user of the recommendation systems of two companies, Netflix and Yahoo. And so when I go to see a movie in the movie theater, very typically what I will do is I'll go to Yahoo and I'll look it up. I hear there's a new movie out, I'll look it up. And first thing I do is I see what the reviewers thought of it, and they grade it on a scale, you know, like school scale. So great movie. I've never seen an A plus. I don't think I've ever even seen an A, but A minus you see every once in a while. Those are usually excellent, even great movies. And then there's, you know, B plus, B minus, C plus, D. And then they also, the users review them and rate them, and they have a separate broken out review because sometimes the users like something that the reviewers don't, and vice versa. So that there's a difference, sort of, they've decided, and I don't object to this at all. In fact, I do care. I trust the professional reviewers just a little bit more than I do the users who write reviews. But the one that I trust the most is the collaborative filtering system, which says, based on what other people said about this movie, we think you will like it. And that comes out in green, and they say, we think you'll like this movie, or you probably will like this movie, or I forget the exact term, but it's pretty strong. And then on the other side, the other rating is in red, and it says, you may not like this movie. They're not willing to say you probably won't like it, but they say you may not like it. And they've got my number. I've rated almost 200 movies on Yahoo. And the way it works is that so have millions, presumably millions of other people rated movies on Yahoo. And they're always rating new movies when they come out. You go see the movie, you go tell them what you think of it, okay? And they have found that I am a lot like 100,000 people that do this, okay? They've put me in a group that I like a certain kind of movie and I don't like another kind of movie. And they don't even really know about kinds of movies. They just know that if you plot out the movies I like, you'll find that there are a bunch of people who like the same movies. And if you check out the movies that I don't like, there are a bunch of people who, the same people, or don't like those movies. You know, maybe, you know, that's how they define these, I guess they call them affinity groups. We're alike. Okay, so along I come and I'm wondering about this movie, which I haven't seen. What they do is they tell me basically that people who are in your affinity group have said thumbs up to this movie. They like it. So we think there's a very high degree of high likelihood, high probability that you're going to like it too. Because you've liked the movies, you and these people like and dislike the same movies. And it's gets better over time. When they like a movie, and I come back going, God, I don't know what they think. Like, for example, the movie Bobby. They said, we think you're going to like this movie, Bobby. I hated that movie. It was, God, I don't walk out on movies very often. I did not walk out on this one. But, boy, did I come close. I just wanted to, there's a climax. The obvious climax is, you know, Bobby gets assassinated. So, you know, I wanted to see maybe they did something interesting around the actual event that they're working up to. So it's not a likely movie to walk out on. Although, boy, I was really thinking about it because it is insipid. It is embarrassingly bad movie. And I've later heard some interviews of the people who did the movie and found out why it was so bad. They didn't do any rehearsals. They didn't even write down the scripts. They just sort of made it up as they went along. And it explains the movie perfectly. There's nothing compelling about it. There's nothing interesting about it. It's just a bunch of scenes shot. No characters you give a shit about. And they're all wearing 1960s style clothes. So la-di-da, you know. Big fucking deal. Don Drysdale was pitching that day. Did you know that? He was setting some record or whatever. Anyway, so that was cool. And so what I did was I set it straight. And I said, no, I didn't like this movie. Presumably, I gave them a lot of data right there. Because that knocked me out of a group and narrowed me down a lot more. Because the group they had me in before enough of those people liked Bobby, and therefore they thought I would like it, and they probably, I went from having an affinity group with 100,000 people in it down to an affinity group with 50,000 people in it, because they knocked out all the people who liked it, because I said, I gave that an F, and I've never given a movie an F, but I really wanted to register my strong feeling, and it's very good, because you like rating movies. Rating movies is a good thing. You come back from seeing a movie, you know, and you discuss it with your friends, and I generally will write a blog post about it and whatever. But it's kind of nice to inform the world on sort of an aggregate basis that, hey, this is what I thought of this movie. I've never written a review. I have at times actually copied and pasted reviews from Scripting News into Yahoo. I have never seen them actually run one of those reviews, though. Anyway, and then, okay, so all that's fine and good, but that's not the point of the story. Then there's Netflix, and Netflix has a service that works pretty much exactly the same way as Yahoo's does, except I will rate movies after I've rented them and watched them. I'll go in and say, okay, you know, same deal. You know, rate this. Do they do it in grades? Let me just look this up. Let's see. Let's go to the browser and go to Netflix. Let's go. My goodness, it lost my password. That's weird. Hold on. Yeah, I have been not renting movies on Netflix for the last few weeks. I rented a bunch of HD movies thinking, you know, great, I have this HD movie player. None of them play. And I've been procrastinating on returning them because I don't know why. I basically, there are no movies that they have right now that I really have a burning desire to see. Create a password? Wait a minute. Member sign in. Oh, there we go. I didn't need to go look up the password. You know, side note, watching The Wire really did sort of knock out a lot of my interest. It was so good. It's like, it's really hard for anything to compete. All right, so let's go look at my queue. And yes, okay, it's not ABC, it's Stars, right? So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars possible. And so I generally tend to rent movies. And do they have an opinion? Yes, they do. They do. Because they have a section called Movies You'll Love. And these are movies. They do it a little differently, actually. Yeah. They say, first of all, I've rated 279 movies with them. And they have a list of movies that they think that I will like. They have 820 recommendations based on my 279 ratings. And the interesting thing is they tell me why they've made these recommendations. They also have RSS feeds, which is very nice. It allows me to subscribe to a list of recommended movies. It allows me to subscribe to my queue. And I also have a friends, they have a friends system, and I've actually set it up so that a few of my friends, I can see what's in their queue, I can see what they've recently watched, and see how they've rated them. And so what I do is, sometimes when I'm looking for something to rent here, I go through these guys' queues. They're basically Dave Jacobs, Nico Mele, and Mark Kinner are the three guys that I've connected up with through here. I'll go through their queue and see what they've liked. What's kind of cool about it is that then once I've watched some of the movies in their queue, the next time we hang out, you know, we tend to talk about the movies that we've seen, and there you go. Well, we've seen some of the same movies, and I can see that they're doing the same thing, because here's Nico. Is just subscribed, just gotten Lost in Translation, which I've just gotten myself, and what else? Let's see. Yeah, we see there's a whole bunch of movies here that I've not even heard of. So it's nice. They've got these systems, and they're getting pretty interesting. It's getting good. Yep, these are all movies that, he hasn't rated a lot of them. So, and then there's some movies in here which I have seen. Like Lord of War, I thought was very good. It didn't get great ratings, but I actually liked it a lot. Anyway, so what's the point? Where is the vendor relationship management in all this? Well, What I'd like to be able to do is, okay, so let me get, so I've got 279 reviews on Netflix. And let's go to Yahoo Movies now, okay? And My Movies, I guess. Is that the place to go to? Well, here's the movies they're recommending for me. They think I should see The Prestige, The Last King of Scotland, Stranger than Fiction, which I've not heard of. It gets a B from the users, a B minus from the critics. Little Miss Sunshine, which I do plan to see. Everybody says it's a great movie. A movie called Short Bus, which I've not heard of. But yet they say I like it. Yes, I have 119 ratings at Yahoo. Now, what I'd like to be able to do is combine the 279 at Netflix with 119 at Yahoo, and you do the arithmetic. Well, we're getting close to 400 reviews then. Mash them together, and Yahoo. Netflix, would you please make some recommendations based on the new information I just gave you about my reviews of Yahoo movies, and vice versa. Yahoo, now you can tell with a higher degree of confidence whether I'm going to like this movie that's being played at, the local movie theater based on the movies that I've liked in the past that I've watched on Netflix. And they even have a deal. You can see there's a little badge on Yahoo, but I don't want them to have to do a deal, okay? That's a very key point. In other words, let me finish that thought. There is a badge here that talks about, you know, if I see a movie that I like here and there's a badge that says save it to rent later, then I click on that button and then presumably they'll send a message. Let's see what happens. I'll click the button. Presumably they send a message over to Netflix. Yes, they take me over to Netflix and they do a search for that movie, right? At which point it's the top thing in the list of Short Bus and I can say save. So it's one click and it's now been added to my queue, okay? So it's very nice. That's a very clean little integration. In fact, they didn't even have to do a data sharing deal. That could have just been done by Yahoo just for the hell of it. They didn't even need to make any special arrangement at all. That could have just been done right off. You know, I could put that on Scripting News. Whenever I talk about a movie, I could have a button that says, go, you know, check this out on Netflix, you know, whatever. Like Idiocracy. I can't wait till that thing comes out. I'm totally all over that, all right? In fact, let's see if I can get that now. Let's see if I can reserve that. Idiocracy. Yep, there it is. Oh, it's already in my queue. Yeah, can't sneak one by me. I'm also going to buy it on Amazon too because, you know, it's $20 and, you know, shit, what the hell, let's go for it. So, now how do you get these companies to let you connect the two silos together? And when I'm doing that, guess what I'm doing? I'm managing the relationship with my vendors, hence VRM, Vendor Relationship Management. But that is not the only application of Vendor Relationship Management. No. There's more. We've talked for 23 minutes and 32, 33, 34, 35 seconds. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time now yakking about, by the way, I'm in my upstairs office. Looking out, it's kind of hazy and foggy out there, so I cannot see the Golden Gate Bridge, but I can see the BART, and there was a BART train just went by. It's like a little SimCity picture, and then, there's this BART line, this is the Richmond line, and I'm looking between the North Berkeley BART station and the El Cerrito BART station. That's where I have a view of. I'm looking down at Albany, basically, Albany, California, from the Berkeley Hills. And then beyond that is Interstate 80, and I can see that the traffic's slow moving eastbound, but it is moving, and it's moving without any, and there goes another BART train going the other direction. Amazingly often, the trains are quite frequent this time of day. In any case, the eastbound traffic is moving unimpeded at this hour. It's about 9:36 a.m. Pacific time. And by now, of course, well, the traffic never is very seriously heavy going east in the morning. It is heavy going east in the evening, however. That's the commute, the morning commute is goes the other direction, goes from the East Bay into San Francisco over the Bay Bridge. And if it were clear, I would also be able to see a little piece of the Bay Bridge, but it's not clear at all. It's quite hazy this morning. It's also quite cold. Let's see, got my little console here. 42 degrees, which is actually up from in the 30s in the middle of the night. To run a little bit of heat this evening, you know, last night. It's getting cold. And a little bit of sniffles there, as you can hear. Anyway, so let's do another vendor relationship management spiel, okay? Right, so Doc has an example, which is, you know, Doc is a traveler. He spends a lot of time on the road. I saw his calendar for January yesterday. Spent a few hours with him yesterday, and we're going to spend a couple of days in January. I'm going to go down to Santa Barbara and hang out down there, and we're going to talk about a bunch of things. I want to talk with him about newsrooms for bloggers. This is something that's very much on my mind, and more about vendor relationship management and next steps to take. We actually came up with quite a few next steps yesterday. We had an open meeting about this at the identity conference at the Computer History Museum in Santa Clara. So Doc's story is this. He travels a lot, and he has certain favorites, certain behaviors. I think he likes Ford Tauruses, I believe. And he flies United because he's got miles on United. And, let's just go through. I don't know all of the specifics of how he likes to travel, but let's say he likes to have a GPS in the car, and he doesn't care about air conditioning and wouldn't be averse to having a satellite radio in the car. And for hotels, he likes a Radisson. If he can't get a Radisson, he'll stay at a Hilton. He needs a king-size non-smoking room. You recognize this is a lot of, if you take all your profile information that you're keeping on all these different websites, you know, Expedia or Travelocity or National Rent-A-Car and a budget rent-a-car or whatever. You think about all these different places you're depositing all these little pieces of information about yourself. That it's better than it used to be, because you'd have to memorize all this stuff. You'd have to remember to ask for these things. Maybe your travel agent would know all these things and they would remember to do this, but you'd have to pay the travel agent commission. And I think I've told this story countless times. You always end up staying where the travel agent wants to stay, because that's where they get the free perks. So this is 36.7 megabytes. I'm recording this one at a very high sampling rate. I wonder if maybe I can do something about that later. Just realizing, who's going to want to spend that much time downloading c'est la vie. So all this profile information is building up around you all over the place. And is it getting better or is it getting worse? Are you getting more of what you want, or have we sort of reached a point now where the information is so spread out that it's not getting any better, and it can't get any better until we take the next step? So this is one of the, you know, sample problems. I have another more ridiculous situation that will highlight I used to talk about this in the early 90s, and I set a bunch of benchmarks to remember so that I could remember. I called that we were living in the era of information poverty at that point in the early 90s. That's what I called it. To give you an example, my brother and I were watching a baseball game in his house in Palo Alto. And it was the Mets versus the Dodgers, and they were playing in Los Angeles. And we were in California. The game was going on right then and there, and we wanted to see if we could find out what the score was. Right? Well, you'd say, well, that's silly. You know, that's not hard to do. You just go to Google and you look up. You type in Mets Dodgers score, and when it doesn't come back with a news story, you click on the news link, and that'll take you to either the Los Angeles Times has a website page with the score on it, or Major League Base, MLB.com has one, or the Mets does, or the do, or the New York Times does, or the Daily News, or the New York Post, or WCBS in New York, which is broadcasting the game. I don't know if they do or they don't, but some stations broadcasting the game. You probably even get that streamed today and listen to the game live, play-by-play live. Well, in 1990, we tried everything we could think of. We called the local radio stations. We called the newspapers in each of the two cities. We called the stadium where the game was being played. We looked on CompuServe. We looked everywhere we could think and maybe the information was available, but we couldn't find it. But I argue that we can do similar experiments today. And of course, the point being was, well, we knew if we lived a normal lifespan, that sometime within our lifetime, this would be a impressive example of information poverty, because today there are so many ways to get that information. We were right. It turns out it was, you know. Well, I would argue that there are similar examples today that say that we're still living in the age of information poverty, meaning that there are still some very trivially simple problems that can be solved using information technology that will make our lives, at least our commercial lives, that much better, and at the same time be an illustration of the difference between the economy we live in today and the economy that we used to live in. In the old economy, you know, you'd constantly have messages broadcast to you from manufacturers who were trying to influence your buying habits, make you want things that you didn't want. Meanwhile, there were many things that you did want that were economically possible that you simply couldn't find. We wanted information about the Mets. They were trying to sell us, brighter smile and, you know, better breath and, you know, I don't know, whatever else they were trying to make, you know, whatever they were selling us on TV. But they couldn't give us what we wanted, but they were trying to make us want other things. This is kind of illogical. Why don't they give us what we want? Because more likely to spend for that, I think. Today, it's utterly ridiculous, given that the technology exists to actually allow us to express what we want and then broadcast that want, okay, and then let people respond. Now, we have things that are beginning to be like that. Let me give you the use case on this one. I have a fireplace in my house, and I just moved into this area. I don't know where you go to get firewood, okay? I've looked in the Yellow Pages, and there are 20 different places you can go to get firewood. Most of them are in Richmond, which is quite a distance away. None of them have websites, so I can't go there to find out what their prices are. If I want to find their prices, I'm going to have to call them. And I don't like doing that anymore. I like going to a website and seeing, okay, well, here's the deal that they're offering, and go to another website, see the deal. And even that would be more work than I really want to do. What I really would like to do is put up a thing that says, my name is Dave, I want firewood, and tell me what your deal is. Do you deliver? When can you be here? Is your product any good? What do people say about you, right? Remember, I like to know that other people have had good experiences. This is the eBay story, right? I like to know that other people have had good experiences using buying your product, they're happy with it, you didn't rip them off, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to know your price is good, and I'd like to know that you're going to be able to deliver it in a reasonable period of time, because I don't want to come over there and get it, for crying out loud. I'm willing to pay you to deliver it, but I'm not willing to be robbed to have you do that. And what else am I interested in? Yes, I'd like to have some sense that you're going to be around in 10 years or 5 years or whatever, because I'm going to pick somebody and I'm going to stay with you. Basically, I don't like shopping for the best deal all the time. I'm going to pick a good deal, and I'm going to feel good about the product because, by the way, I'd like to know that your product, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I'd like to know your product is good quality. You know, is your wood burn easy? You know, do you slice it into small enough pieces so that, you know, I don't have to spend 3 hours getting it? But tell me your story about your product, you know? And we're getting there, okay? We've got things like, for example, Craigslist. Theoretically, I could put an ad up on Craigslist, and I would start getting some calls from vendors, but I wouldn't have any idea who they are, you know, and I really don't like buying that way. I want to have some idea who they are and what other people say about them. So That would also be vendor relationship management. It's and they're getting there, okay? Another way they're doing this, like Amazon has wish lists, right? So I can publish a wish list, say I want. That's only for gifts, and it only works for buying things on Amazon. And what I want to be able to do is put out a wish list and have vendors be able to see that wish list and then have them be able to make bids on it. And I want that for anything, not just anything that is offered in a system, but I want to be able to ask for things that don't exist. And this kind of goes to the conversation, the last podcast that I did with Jason Kalkanis and Peter Rojas, where all of us, all three of us, and I imagine many other people like us, are thinking about what could be better in podcast playing devices, and no vendor's actually making the product for us. But if we can organize our design, our wants, what we want from this thing, in an effective way, and then there are enough of us, somebody's going to make the product, right? Because that's what business is about. Business is about, and however, we're talking about a fundamental shift in the way the economy works. Because that isn't the way it used to be. The way it used to be is the wizards would sit up in their ivory tower, and every so often they'd pop down from the tower and say, here's our gift to you, dear consumer. Please, you know, enjoy and revel in our brilliance, and we'll be back again some point in the future to bless you even with more of our brilliance. And that isn't the way it's going to work in the future. The way it's going to work in the future is, hey, a bunch of us would like this product. Would anybody like to make this for us? And that's VRM. And when I said the other day, actually it was just yesterday, that Yahoo could organize itself around the principles of VRM and really kick some butt, I really, really, really believe that they could. I think it would be very daring for them to do it. I think it would involve aligning your interests in every respect possible with the user and basically saying to the vendors that your job here is to give the users what they want. And that means saying no to the vendors a lot of the time. And the 20th century anachronisms of vendors are not going to like you very much for doing that. But ultimately, you'll leave Google in the dust, because Google is very much building a 20th century business. Very, very much. They're not building good nets for catching the ideas of users. They're building broadcast mechanisms for vendors to tell users about products that they've already made. Now, not to say that sometimes you don't want that, okay? But more often than not, I can't remember having seen an ad that actually struck me as like, oh, wow, I've actually been looking for that. Man, how great. That's a great ad, because I've actually been looking for that product, and thank goodness I actually found it now. I can't recall that ever happening. I've seen ads that made me laugh and, you know, sort of, you know, okay, I'll think I'll remember that because maybe someday that'll, like, be something I want to get, or it just never seems to happen. I mean, like the Lexus ad where they show the car parking itself. That was pretty cool. But it's not a good enough reason for me to go out and spend $50,000 on a new car. I'm sure that it sold a few cars. Don't get me wrong. But it isn't, what would be different would be as if I said, man, you know, the thing that I want more in a car, more than anything in a car, is that it parks itself, and I'm willing to pay $50,000 for it. And then 85,000 other people said, yeah, you know, you're right. That would be the thing that would make me spend $50,000 on a car, too. That's the VRM approach, in my humble opinion. VRM, IMHO. And now we're at 39 minutes, 23 seconds. And, you know, the 40 minutes is the perfect time for a podcast. So we're going to cut over to KCRW. Let's see if they're still playing some of that music. And we're going to just catch some of KCRW's, 3939. Okay, here we go. Let's go, guys. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, no. Why does it not come up? Okay, let's stop that. 39:56. Okay. That's Morning Becomes Eclectic is the greatest show. And this is a little bit of eclectic morningness from KCRW in Santa Monica. Just want to get a little plug in there for them. They do a great job. You can get it simulcast on the web. It's a fantastic public radio station, if you can hear me. And let's just tune this down a little bit. And my name is Dave Weiner, and this is Morning Coffee Notes for the 6th of December, 2006. And we'll see you all next time, okay? Take care. Bye.